Well, this hour, as we continue our discussion with David Cerita, we'll also take phone calls here on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back, George Norrie with you, David Cerita. David, a couple ham radio operators have sent us some messages, and they wanted to know the frequency that you have been on with those radios.
Well, I would, to do this experiment, I think we could do a global experiment where you station people around the globe at the same time to prove that it's not some guy playing tricks on us, because it's actually impossible, because every single radio should respond. But I don't, I'm going to wait until I have permission from Jimmy, because I want to respect him. He's the one who started this. I'm doing something different with what he started, in that I'm using my star frequency octaves based on the radius of stars, and I'm sending those signals out at his designated frequency. But I can give you a clue. It's a perfect harmonic of 432. So for those people who follow the 432 middle A music scale, you'll understand. In fact, if you're really interested, just write me, davidcerita@hotmail.com, all those ham radio operators, and I can connect you to Jimmy. But I wanted to read this really simple quote from People Magazine 2019, because this data is set in stone before the effort by President Trump to cause the Pentagon to disclose everything they know about UFOs. Well,
that's so the one they interviewed Tom DeLonge from To the Academy of the Stars,
right? That's right. That's right, Tom DeLonge. So it says in here, you have to realize that these craft were descending in 0.78 seconds from above 80,000 feet. It's very important to understand that the radar would know how far above 80,000 feet to sea level, which is literally less than 1 second. It goes from the tip of the atmosphere to hovering a foot above the water. That's scary to see, and there's 100 of them doing that. You're kind of going, what is in those things and how they're doing that, and what the hell are we supposed to do about it? Like, that data absolutely suggests 80,000 miles an hour, by the way. In fact, the People Magazine article states 20 to 80,000 miles an hour. So once you're at 80,000 miles an hour, once you're at 60, once you're at 50, once you're at 40,000 miles an hour, 40,000 miles an hour is more than twice as fast is the fastest ICBM, which
absolutely
is the fastest
in our atmosphere, too, by the way.
Right. I mean, you know, George, I've skydived from 30,000 feet. I trained at Edwards Air Force Base, and I know a lot about pressure, temperatures at those altitudes. You to go from 80,000 feet as a pilot, let's say a pilot was going to go from no pressure, because you need a pressure suit or a highly pressurized cabin to hold your body together at 80,000 feet. And the temperature up there is devastatingly cold. It's below, I mean, depending on the time of the year, but it's below temperatures that humans can exist at without proper heating. We don't fly that high. The SR-7 Blackbird, which is still the fastest plane ever, 2,500 miles an hour, right, was a super high altitude, you know, reconnaissance aircraft. We don't exist at 80,000 miles, 80,000 feet above the Earth, except for when the space shuttle's going into orbit, right? When the space shuttle goes into orbit, it's hundreds of miles above the Earth. So 80,000 feet is 15.15 miles. But this is clearly in the 80,000 mile range, and that's where you cross the line of this being a military threat from another country on the Earth. You're way past that. And Elizondo is saying they're trying to identify if there is a military threat from Earth, right? But this is clearly not from Earth. And if you look at Sean Cahill, who is the former U.S. Navy chief who testified on CNN last week with Chris Cuomo, that these craft are operating 1,000 to 10,000 years ahead of us. He personally witnessed a group of these UFOs going into a counterclockwise vortex pattern, disappearing one by one through the vortex. So I could postulate that is a stargate, And the radar data suggested that those UFOs disappeared just north of Guadalupe Island, which is in, in the Baja California, region. And that is the same north latitude as the Great Pyramid of Egypt. And it happens to be the same north latitude of the Houston Control, the Houston Control Center. And also, the exact moment that we lost radio contact with the crew of the Space Shuttle Columbia just as it was breaking apart, we lost radio contact with them at that exact north latitude. So that really interests me as data. So I'm in the position now, considering they've witnessed hundreds of these things at a time and every day for a year on the Atlantic, that there are probably stargates, portals, and one such portal exists in the exact location stated by Sean Cahill, just north of Guadalupe Island. And one of the things interesting in the series Unidentified is when Elizondo and Cahill go to visit the island and collect reports from locals, they find out that location is loaded with great white sharks who seem to be attracted to this magnetic anomaly that they detected.
Whatever it is.
Island. And that magnetic anomaly could possibly be evidence of a stargate, a portal where they're coming through. So there's two hypotheses. They either have bases here, and when I stated that the Roswell case started in northern Idaho in June and then led to Kenneth Arnold, then to Portland, and then to the Roswell, New Mexico, which was, I believe, a U.S. fighter jet chase of the UFOs, leading to the weapon that was used to take down the Roswell craft, which led to their crash. So it started in northern Idaho. So because I live in this region and I see, because I live in the middle of nowhere, I don't live in a town. We're on 2 acres, 20 minutes from our nearest town. I see these UFOs all the time. And in fact, just last week, my daughter, Amira, called me out on the balcony. I got my binoculars, and I'm looking up at a perfect triangle UFO. So I think there is a portal, or they have set up bases all over this planet in specific locations. And when you understand the complexity of radar systems we have, we see everything. The military sees everything every day that enters this planet from beyond. But they don't have to fly in like the way a submarine cruises through the water, like some big ship coming, past Jupiter, past, Saturn, Jupiter, and coming past Mars and coming into Earth. They don't have to do that. They jump in and out through these portals and when Sean Cahill reported this data of the vortex and the UFOs disappearing through it, nobody called Stargate. And Elizondo didn't call Stargate, but I'm calling Stargate because that is the fashion of a vortex portal. Now come to the newest footage that was released of the UAP hovering above the stormy seas. This is brand new footage. And you see the thing kind of hovering. It kind of looked like the way a bee kind of hovers. And it's moving in this little wobbly vortex. And it slowly comes down to the surface of the water. And the Navy operators are saying there are 6-foot swells out there, 35, 40 mile an hour winds. So it's pretty choppy seas, not brutal. And the thing just kind of steadies itself, and then it plops right in the water. And they've reported these UAPs underwater going over 100 knots. And that's impossible because our submarines can't come anywhere near that, nowhere near it. So that means the same technology that they're using that seems to not be affected by the inertia and the drag on a submarine or a jet in the air doesn't affect them. And if a craft the size of the Tic Tac, which is estimated to be 35, 40 feet, which is the same size as Commander Fravor's fighter jet. Mm-hmm. His jet is 37, 38 feet. Then then if something was going by you with that kind of size at even 20,000 miles an hour, the shock wave would cause a lot of damage.
Would knock you out.
Amount of damage. Let's take a great perimeter of area, because you can't have physical mass and move through air at that speed without causing a shock wave. And we know this because it was several years ago when this meteor came down over Russia, and it devastated this whole town, broke the windows, caused huge damage to buildings. And we know those meteors come in at, meteors outside the atmosphere can go over 100,000 miles an hour, actually. But the meteors that are burning up in our atmosphere are 20, 30, and even 45,000 miles an hour.
That's still pretty fast, David.
Pretty fast, but really tiny. So imagine something, a meteor as big as the Tic Tac, 35, 40 feet going that fast. What I'm saying is the shock wave is devastating.
Let's take some calls here for you. Let's go east of the Rockies. Brian's with us in Indianapolis. Go ahead, Bri.
Hey, George, good morning. Good to be on the show.
Hey there.
I can't even believe I got through, man, getting ready to leave for work. But anyway.
Perfect.
Saturday night, about 11 o'clock, if you're looking west and say west is noon, 12 o'clock on the dial, about 1 o'clock, me and my wife witnessed like a Roman candle. These round objects, three at a time, boom, 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 disappear in a perfect row, three at a time. 50 of them. We counted 50 of them, George.
All right, you know what you were looking at. Elon Musk's Starlink satellite system, where he sends up 40 or 50 at a time.
Now, I told Chris, I said, now, I think Elon Musk sent some satellites up a couple weeks ago. This might be them. But listen, we've seen this before. We've seen this on the December 21st when Jupiter and Saturn lined up to make the Christmas star. The same thing happened, the same exact spot, 1 o'clock on the dial. There was probably 20 of them, three at a time.
Yeah, he's been launching a lot of these, Brian.
And they were if they were too close to each other, you could tell one of them would slow down.
Absolutely.
One behind.
Let's bring in David. David, what do you think?
Well, believe it or not, I saw it. I don't know. I got my big binoculars out. I saw it looked like a train of dots of lights, and I was zoomed right in on them. So I looked on my satellite tracker app, and in my location, they either didn't add the new launch, because you can only see Starlink for no more than a day or two at the most.
And then they're gone.
Once they're way up there, I watch them on my satellite tracker. I'll look, because there's a lot of Starlinks up there, right? So I'll say Starlink's going over right now. It's not always going over in my region, which is just north of northern Idaho. And this particular night that this person's talking about is probably the same night I saw, because there were photographs taken in northern Montana, which is very close to us here as well. There was no indication that Starlink was visible from here, but yet we were seeing what appeared to be Starlink, and Starlink did launch that evening, but it didn't look like the trajectory was anywhere near us. So it's really tricky. So you got to get this tracker, satellite tracker app, and then, just add all the Starlinks to it, and then you see something going over that you think might be Starlink. Just see if you can identify your location, should you be able to see that. But once the Starlinks are way up there, because they're very small satellites,
yeah,
they're invisible. Because, I've watched them on the tracker app, and you just can't see them.
And they're in that little cluster. Let's go to our wild card line, Thomas, in La Jolla, California. Hello, Tom.
George, thank you for accepting my call. David, it's always a pleasure to hear your interviews on Coast, and great conversation tonight. Comment and then a question, David. You mentioned two movies. You mentioned Close Encounters of the Third Kind, Steven Spielberg, and you mentioned Contact, which was the production team of Forrest Gump that produced Contact with Matthew McConaughey and Jodie Foster. And where I'm going with this, David, is it seems like there is a soft disclosure a predictive programming done through very top shelf movies from Hollywood, you know, with high production values, like Day the Earth Stood Still, okay, was directed by Robert Wise, who directed The Sound of Music, and brought in superstars Patricia Neal and Michael Rennie. You had The Arrival in the mid-90s with Charlie Sheen and Terry Polo. And, you know, you have Independence Day, directed by Roland Emmerich, you know. Again, a top-shelf production movie, you know, that presents, well, a soft disclosure, if you will, like a predictive programming. Maybe the president, maybe Bill Clinton, wouldn't admit to aliens, or Barack Obama, or Donald Trump, or Joe Biden, but you can have an admission of disclosure through entertainment, if you will, and through top-shelf entertainment, you know, top-quality directors like Steven Spielberg, top-quality actors, and you can bring this soft disclosure, this predictive programming, if you will, to the public through venues such as Hollywood. I was wondering if you would comment on that, since you brought up the two movies, Contact and Close Encounters. Is there a connection there? Is there?
Well, I read the book Contact, and I have to say it's a million times better than the movie, even though I really love the movie. But Close Encounters is still my favorite movie of all time. But now Marvel Studios is coming out with Eternals, and Eternals seems to be a film about the arrival of gods in craft, in you know, we call them UFOs, but the craft of the gods. And I was kind of going in this direction with George tonight. You know, when you read the Iliad and the Odyssey by Homer, there's descriptions of the goddess Athena shooting across the sky like a meteor. So at the speed of a meteor, she comes down on the earth, and with her spear and her lance, she devastates the corrupted government and military people of the earth, and causes a bloody massacre to end a period of corruption on the earth. And she moves at such a speed that reminds me of the speed of these things that we're describing that are reaching 80,000 miles an hour and higher. Most likely they're going even faster. So, and possibly coming through these portals that Sean Cahill described. So I'm coming up with a hypothesis looking at ancient records that there are great periods of history where there is the end of an era, that the corruption is only allowed to go on so long, and then there is an intervention.
Well, that's very well put, David. We're going to come back and wrap things up and take final phone calls with David Sirita right here on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to our final segment. George Norrie with you, David Sirita with us. David, so you would not be shocked, you would not be surprised if they came out with this announcement June 25th or whenever, that what we're looking at are high-speed drones.
Yeah, because they're using the word drone in major press a lot. And that concerns me, and it concerns me that they're dropping the velocity of these things into the range of hyper, you know, velocity
achievable
technology that we currently possess. And that puts it in the realm of military threat. But when you look at the original data from the radar, and the statement in People magazine is very accurate, that these things are reaching 80,000 miles an hour and probably faster. But Oumuamua, this mystery comet, was, I mean, my meteor.
Or asteroid, whatever it might be.
Asteroid. It was doing 85,000 miles an hour when it was coming into the solar system. But when it slingshotted around the sun and approached 200,000 miles an hour, that's when Avi Loeb, you know, basically was saying that this is impossible for a velocity like that to occur.
Yeah, he believes it's extraterrestrial, doesn't he?
So it must have some form of propulsion that we don't understand. And we assume because it's a rock, it can't be intelligent. Yet If you look through your Bible in the Old Testament, I can show you many, many incidences of stones, of rocks, being highly intelligent and being portals or technology that was used by the prophets to communicate with God. So you can't say because it appears to be a rock that it couldn't possibly be conscious or intelligent. So the fact that it reached 200,000 miles an hour September 9th through the 11th and so on as it slingshotted around the sun, and it went past where the limits of physics said it should have gone, that led to the theory. Again, we're talking speed tonight. We're talking velocity. So if you keep these Navy UAP reports in their proper perspective with the real radar data, they're 20 to 40 times faster than our fastest jets. So they're not from here. And Sean Cahill hit the nail on the head, saying they're 1,000 to 10,000 years ahead of everything on Earth. So what does that leave you with? So what I want to see is, are they going to try and brainwash the public into thinking that we could be dealing with drones? That's what I want to see, and that concerns me for the integrity of the entire UFO movement.
All right, let's go to some of the calls. Let's go to our wild card line. Blair in Sedona, Arizona is with us. Hello, Blair.
Hi, George. And David, my best to Crystal and your family.
Thank you.
Hey, David, you mentioned Galactic Federation. Could it be what the Urantia book states, that we're a part of a system of inhabited planets that has been communication-wise and otherwise quarantined by our creators because of a misuse of free will by our local celestial administrators, the gods with a small g you talked about, and that maybe aspects of our government are already in contact with such, and thus this has to do with disclosure or not, and also the economics of it, as Richard Dolan talks about, there goes the fossil fuel industry if we have all this free energy. Your comment, please.
Well, first, great to hear your voice, Blair. Blair and I know each other personally. Uh-huh. I used to live in Sedona.
I guess that.
He is able to get in your show.
He's a good
and
listener.
We sat together actually watching, you know, UFOs in Sedona, unexplainable lights in the sky, with our good friend Jim Law, who's recently passed away. So, you know, I'm speculating that the data is in the region that we're dealing with the lowercase gods, yes, and that there could be a war or a cleansing, if you will, of the injustice on the earth. Because when your pilots are saying there's hundreds of them and you're seeing them every day, and they're not Russians, they're not Chinese, I mean, we're way past that. I mean, we're not dealing with Russia, China, and we're not dealing with India. So there's no doubt they're here. They're physical. They have structure. They have velocity way beyond our capacity. What are they doing here? They're probably, my guess is they've done a massive assessment of our military capacity, and they know every position of every missile launching, you know, location. They've assessed our entire world military, and they could destroy us in a matter of minutes. It would be over in minutes. So the question is, even though they haven't done anything yet, if you look in the historical records, if you read Sitchin's The Wars of Gods and Men, if you look in the historical record, you will see periods where the lowercase gods interact, and they, because we're their asset physically, and they see us going completely out of order, they're going to do something about it. And they're not just going to let this planet go to waste and be wasted by the mindlessness of what we're doing. And yes, what Dolan is saying is important, that the economics of the world change. As soon as you have technology like this, how do you get a guy to pay his taxes when he can fly away at 80,000 miles an hour?
Let's go to George in St. Louis. Hey, George, welcome to the program.
Hi, David. Hi, George.
Hey, George.
David, what you're describing, the effects, the portals, the high G forces, what you're describing is the effects of dark energy. And if this is possible, if somebody can harness 73% of the universe of the dark energy, You would the portals you described is expansion of space under dark energy. Also, the high speeds you're talking about, we're talking about no gravity when you're experiencing a zero, dark energy. And now let me tell you what I think dark energy is. When we split the atom, we had a tremendous energy release. What if we split even the subatomic particles of atoms? Think of that energy that would be released. It would be a huge multiple of when Einstein wrote the formula E equals mc squared. We're talking about a huge multiple of that. That's what I think is going, at least the power that's being used here.
Could we have created that much dark energy and dark matter, David?
Well, you see, the evidence suggests that there's no disruption upon their sudden accelerations of a shock wave that represents, a propulsion in the sense that we understand propulsion, which is thrust of mass and the Lorentz forces, that basically we don't see any of that with the way these UAPs move, which means they're, in my theory, they've done something to cancel out inertia and gravity to an extremely low number so that when they suddenly accelerate, there is no displacement of the air and the volume of Earth mass around them. Because, again, if you see a meteorite coming in that's the size of one of these, UAPs, 40 feet, and it's going for even 40,000 miles an hour, the damage the shockwave would cause would be enormous, enormous. To even, like, for example, dropping from above 80,000 feet to sea level in 0.78 seconds, which is over 69,000 miles an hour, when it stopped, if it had mass and thrust, it would cause an explosion in the water beneath it, an explosion. But that doesn't happen. And because that doesn't happen, it means, and again, because they can displace water and move at over 100 and possibly 200 knots under the water, according to sonar data by the Navy, then they're doing something that is so different. It's so different that none of our understandings of propulsion have any relevance at all. And again, that's why Sean Cahill, his former Navy chief, is saying they're 1,000 to 10,000 years ahead of us. So in Einstein's formula, the way we move things, when that thing hit the deck at over 69,000 miles an hour, and again, we don't know how high above 80,000 feet, because the radar can see hundreds of miles. It can see over 200, 300, 400, 500 miles at the speed of light. So they know that data. They're not giving us that data, but the People magazine article says 80,000 miles an hour. So let's say you hit the deck at 80,000 miles an hour, you stop on a dime. The G-forces will liquefy a human being because we're 87% water. It would liquefy us. Our skin would explode. In fact, your skin explodes at 80,000 feet if you don't have a pressure suit. Absolutely. It explodes before that. So we don't know what we're dealing with technologically. We're seeing physical mass objects that don't have any evidence of physical mass propulsion as per equals mc squared at all.
Let's go to J.D. in Indiana on the wild card line. Hello, J.D. Go ahead.
Wow, Mr. Norrie. Wow, wow, wow.
The guy's a genius, isn't he?
You too.
Huh.
Okay, like Thomas at La Jolla and Mike the Millennial, a comment and two quick questions for David.
Okay.
David, I agree with you. I think this it's going to be more of a grassroots disclosure, not government. Can a leopard remove its spots? The two questions, distortion correction, I was wondering, you kind of touched on it at the very beginning of the last segment. Distortion correction, does that mean comparison of 432 hertz versus 440 hertz? Then my final question, do they make a splash when they enter the ocean?
Take that one first, David.
Well, according to David Fravor, the water was foaming, and this thing was under the surface of the water, and the rest of the water was perfectly still or relatively still. So that means it has an effect on the mass of the water. But yet its sudden acceleration approaching the Earth, which is not a drop, it's an approach to the Earth at that enormous speed of 80,000 miles an hour, and a sudden stop, the shock wave of that sudden stop with the air mass volume it displaced would cause an explosion, an enormous explosion in the water. And all he saw was a certain amount of foaming. So that means it had some effect on the water. So it is physical, but it's somehow displaced the mass-gravity equation, mass and gravity being proportional in Einstein's and you know, Newton's understanding of mass and gravity. So there's when I look at the new footage of the UAP hovering above the ocean with stormy seas, I speculate the behavior of a magnetic propulsion system, that there's something about magnetism, and I understand magnetism very well, you know, paramagnetism, diamagnetism, and ferromagnetism. Everything is actually magnetic. They may have taken magnetism to a degree that is so far beyond where we've taken it, and I know what that looks like under the microscope, but we haven't taken magnetism far enough. They may not be using anti-gravity. They may be using a magnetic propulsion, because the way that thing moves, the way it wobbles around in the air, it looks like it's riding on a magnetic wavelength. And so therefore, it somehow, there's a certain point of magnetism that we need to detect. We need to know how many Gauss, milligauss, or Tesla, if you even reach one Tesla at a distance from these things, we need to have Tesla and Gauss meters for the Navy to use as they approach these things, because we need to see if there's a big magnetic field coming off of it.
David, give out your website to folks, would you?
My website is my name, davidserita.co, like company. And so David, SEREDA.co is my website. You can see a lot of my magnetic therapy products there. And thank you very much, George, for having me on.
Thank you, David. Keep in touch. And well, let's see what happens June 25th. If disclosure really pops, or if they're going to come up with some excuse, it'll be fascinating. On our next Coast to Coast program, Stephen Quayle joins us with some incredible revelations. So make sure you're part of the program. For Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Latasseur, Ryan Stacey, Stephanie Smith, Chris Burrows, Tim Banal, Ian Punnett, and George Knapp. I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.